Welcome to Influential Entrepreneurs, bringing you interviews with elite business leaders and experts, sharing tips and strategies for elevating your business to the next level. Here's your host, Mike Saunders.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Influential Entrepreneurs. This is Mike Saunders, the Authority Positioning Coach. Today we have with us Rob Ferguson, who's founder and advisor with Ferguson Alliance. Rob, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Mike. Glad to be here.
Hey, so I know you guys do a lot of work with family businesses and exit planning. And before we dive into that, I always love to hear, the founder's story, the entrepreneurial journey. So give us a little bit of your background and what led you into this industry in the first place.
Well, I wish I could tell you it was by a perfect design and plan, but it kind of found me versus me finding it. I spent 30 years of my first half of career in business with large publicly traded companies and private equity sponsored institutional businesses as CEO or the chief executive for mergers and acquisitions. And I ended up working with a family business that was 100 years old that as their non-family member CEO, they got into some trouble. So I helped them get out of that trouble. And then I started working for some family businesses, again, 100 years old, that were very successful in their own right. And so I kind of learned the ins and outs of family businesses and really fell in love with the family business and realized how important they are to our country's economy, how important they are to innovation, how important they are to philanthropy. And so I don't know. I just started working with family businesses and primarily helping them with corporate governance. Since I was a CEO of a publicly traded company and sat on some public boards, I was able to bring that expertise in and for governance and modify it that works best for family businesses. Then I helped them with succession planning because I had the M&A experience and was able to bring in some tools and some best practices to help these business owners get their business ready, as well as get themselves ready for an exit. And lo and behold, I've been doing that for 13 years. And
yeah, you look up and you look around and you're like, wow, 10 plus years, 13 years. That's that's that. The time just clips by. And you know, one of my favorite TV shows on CNBC is The Prophet with Marcus Lemonis. And I will remind you or ask you, he doesn't really like working with family business as much because of the internal squabbles that can come up. So, so the question I would have is: should you have a family first business or a business first family?
Yeah, great question. In fact, that's the first question we ask before we ever start an engagement. And it seems like an easy question, right? Are you a business first family, or are you a family first business? And it's a real struggle for our clients to answer that once they understand it's not a value-based question. It's a question of what best interest are you serving? Yeah. And there's not a right or wrong, Mike, right? I mean, there's plenty of family-first businesses. Think about your local dry cleaners or maybe a lot of restaurants. Those businesses are in place to really provide jobs and income for the family, and sometimes they're lifestyle businesses. All great. However, those types of business philosophies have limitations, particularly on scale and growth. And so, when families start working with us, that's what we want to find out or help them discover what's their long-term plan. Where are they headed? Because what we're really motivated to do is help these family businesses break the trend with the lifespan cycle that we're seeing. We've seen these family-owned businesses' life cycle decline to now 24 years. They used to be over 62 years average length, and now it's down to 24 years. It's still a longer life cycle than any kind of S&P 500 company. But we want to reverse that trend. And so that's where we really spend our time working with business first families.
Yeah. And, you know, you mentioned exit planning, and I know that traditionally you think about organization that would come to you and say, you know, we've got a 5 to 7 year runway. I'm the owner. I might want to exit. So help me plan some strategy. So am I going to just sell it outright? Am I going to, pass it on to employees? There's a lot of options that way, but there's another layer of options that gets added into exit planning when you're talking about a family business. What are some of those that are different than a traditional organization planning for an exit?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, anytime exit planning comes up or succession planning, there's a multitude of conversations happening at once. And we dissect them down to three primary conversations. One is succession of wealth. Two, succession of business ownership. And then three, succession of leadership. All three separate, but certainly tied together. So once and I think that's the difference that you'll see in family businesses versus non-family businesses, because a lot of times the family wealth obviously is not going to be part of that equation. And the other thing, too, is when you're dealing with family, it's family, right?
Yeah.
You have emotions. You have lifelong history. You have those kind of complexities, which need to be attended to empathetically, firmly, but ultimately help guide families to get to the decision of not necessarily equal, but equitable. And so once we get those three conversations separated, we kind of go down the path of, okay, what are we going to do with your wealth? How's that going to work? For your children who are in the business, your children are not in the business. Okay, what are you going to do with the business ownership? How do you see that working? And then what about business leadership? Maybe your children have shares, but they're not qualified to lead. So how's that going to work? And then once we come up with our three plans, then we bring those three plans together and make sure that those are going to be integrated and work well. And we go through an iterative process a couple times. And then we have a holistic succession plan in place for the family to execute against.
Because it sounds to me like there is not one cookie cutter. Let's Google how to exit a business if you own it as a family. Here's the checklist, done and done. Right. I mean, there's definitely a lot of nuances that go into that. And you almost feel like that life coach going, well, what does retirement look like for you? And, you know, as the patriarch of the family or the matriarch of the family, do you feel like it would be this? And do you want to be totally out, or do you want to pass it along to a group of the family members? So do you find that these days some of your clients are doing some creative things like that, more than just a cut and dry, here's a check and I'm out?
Yes. Well, number one, every family business has its nuances, as you pointed out. And so I don't think we ever treat any family business client generically, although there are some best practices and standard issues or questions that are applicable across the board. I hope that makes sense. So we want to get clarity on what is the long-term view of the patriarch or matriarch or founder of the business. And once we get alignment there, then we can start coming up with the various nuances that could be. A lot of times we have family members, the next generation isn't interested in the business at all. And so then what do you do for succession? We have some issues with families. We have a general question. Okay, for share transfer, is it going to be you're going to transfer shares to all family members or only blood family members? Those get to become very interesting discussions. So those are the nuances that we have to get into that we normally wouldn't get into with non-family businesses.
And I'm sure you've read the book Built to Sell, right?
Yeah.
So that concept of, you know, hey, I want to sell the business, and then the business is in shambles, and the consultant says, let's spruce it up and polish it up so you get the best possible price. And then, you know, maybe possibly now you've got things running like a top and you don't even want to sell. But the concept is there might be some curb appeal, quote unquote, that could be done ahead of a exit execution that maybe that external third party like yourself could kind of point to and go, look, we could sell now, but if we did X, Y, and Z in the next 1 to 2 to 3 years, boy, we could really put you in a better position. So I think sometimes people go, well, I'll just, you know, talk to my guy and my, you know, friend or my barber said, well, talk a little bit about the benefit of having that outside advisor coming in to A, help with the exit plan, but also doing some things ahead of time that will probably make the exit and the, you know, transaction much more profitable than if you, you know, tried it using common advice that you would get on the street.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Getting advice from your barber doesn't always pan out when it comes to selling your business. With our clients, on average, over 85% of their net worth is in their business. So it's interesting to us, and I know you talk to a lot of financial planners, that these, and a lot of these are high net worth individuals, they will hire a financial planner, a certified financial planner, to help them with their 20% of their net worth or their 15% of net worth. But they, for whatever reason, don't know about business advisors. They don't know how to seek that out, or they don't think they need it because they're very smart about their business. But that's where 85% of their net worth is
tied up. Well, so, it's kind of natural, I feel, because it's like, well, I go to my bank, you know, monthly statement, and I pull it up and I see my checking, savings, and then here's my investment accounts. That feels liquid, even though it might be tied up into some qualified accounts, but that feels more liquid. But then I go to work and I'm just plugging away and trying to make the business grow. You don't really sense the liquidity of that. But in reality, wow, if 85% of your net worth is in your business, that should be something that you're really focusing on to help to make sure you're maximizing that.
Yeah, you hit it right. You hit it right in the center of the target. So that's what we do, is raise that awareness, let them see really what their true value of their business is. And then we monitor that each and every year to see how that value is growing, or if it's not, what do we need to do about it? So that's the second thing, is give them awareness around their value. And then the third thing is we manage their expectations. It's really difficult to tell somebody their baby's ugly, right? You just wouldn't walk up to a mother and say, hey, your baby's ugly. Well, it's the same thing with business owners. You just don't walk up to a business owner and say, oh my gosh, this business looks awful. But we have to give the reality check. And what we do is we educate our business owners of how our business is valued. And, you know, there's a lot of complexity to business valuations, but to make it really simple, it's typically a profit number times a multiple as how these businesses get valued. And so the business is the one that establishes the profit, right? A lot of times that's measured as EBIT, earnings before income, interest and taxes, or EBITDA, earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization. So those are kind of the basics. So the company is responsible for setting that, but it's the market that sets the multiple. Okay, fine. So it's what are other like businesses to yours? How, what are they trading at? What's the multiple? Is it 5 times? Is it 10 times? So then you just multiply that market multiple of 5 times the profit, and there's your valuation. But it's very different for some of these businesses, particularly family businesses. What they don't understand is that in our valuations and our findings, only 25% of the multiple is based on the tangible assets of the company. In other words, the financials of the company. 75% of that multiple is influenced by the intangibles. The intangibles are things like the company culture, the company brand, you know, their infrastructure, their operating systems, on and on and on. And so what we do is we educate them where the real juice is to increase the value. And it's working on those intangibles over time, increases the financial tangibles that get you that multiple effect on the valuation.
Yeah. I think it's always, sometimes people are like, you know, oh, well, I could lose X number of dollars if I, whatever, you know, if you, whatever we're talking about. But it's those intangibles, those what ifs that kind of makes, hopefully makes someone go, oof, that big question mark there, that could be a big chunk of change. And you don't know what you don't know. And when you can finally bring someone in that can maybe even do an assessment and say, here's the deal. Here's this printout. Here's what we are dealing with right now. And if we do, you know, if this, then that, if we do this, then that could happen. And I think that's the magnifying glass that you're able to bring to these businesses to say, you know, it's do what you want, but here's the direction we can take you.
Yeah, no, that's right. So to get really to an example, a lot of owners, they're the center of the hub, right? All decisions are flowing through these owners, even our large mid-cap businesses. Well, that business is going to get discounted, because if somebody were to buy that business and the owner leaves with a pocket full of money, then the business can no longer function effectively without that business owner there. So what we have to show or demonstrate to these business owners is, if you were to invest $200,000, let's say, in a CEO or a chief operating officer to replace you, and you start building a leadership team, that as you do that business owner is saying, oh my goodness, there goes $200,000 of my profit or EBITDA. Right. I want to conserve that. But instead, what we show them is 75% of your multiple is going to be impacted by whatever that is, 10 times. So that $200,000 cost could actually yield you over $1.5 to $2 million of incremental value.
Isn't that exactly the same argument or proof case that we see every episode in Shark Tank? You know, they come in and they're like, I don't want to give up X percent. They're like, yeah, but you don't realize something. 100% of what you got now is not at all it doesn't compare to if we come in and we take your business to 10 million a year, then it's chump change. So you're stumbling over pennies, you know, dollars to get to the pennies. And what you just brought up there is, you know, many times it's this 1 + 1 = 100, you know, philosophy. And they're so dialed in on the initial front end of the formula, and they don't see the big picture.
Yeah. So that's the third thing we do is educate them on valuation and what are the levers that increase or decrease your valuation of your business, how you make it work. Then the last thing we do is just set them up for expectations on timing. Okay, so when is the best time to sell the business? If a business owner has a life event, there's an emergency, they have a particular need, they need to sell their business in the next year or two. There's really not a lot we can do, or I would suggest any advisor could do, to help them increase their value. There's really not.
And if you need a little more runway than that,
you really do. So, and I would just say to your listeners, if you're getting some consultants or some advice that, hey, look, I can turn this thing up in 6 months or 12 months, and you're going to make gazillions of dollars, I would be very leery of that, because I just don't see that. I've been doing this for many, many years, multiple decades. And it's just not possible. But if that family owner has what you mentioned, 5 year, 7 year, kind of that kind of runway, well, then you have a lot of room to increase that value, because you're working on the intangibles of the business.
Yeah.
And once we educate them on the timing, that helps them quite a bit. And what our standard practice is, most of our engagements with our clients are in year at least 12 months or many years with several of our clients, is every year we ask them a question. That question is it time to exit the business, or is it time to reinvest in the business? And so we we help that conversation come up every year, because the premise of the book, the John Warlaw book that you mentioned, mm-hmm. Built to Sell, is every business owner needs to be thinking about selling their business, even from the first day they open their doors. And so we subscribe to that, and we ask these business owners, where are you? Is it time to sell? Is it time to reinvest? And we have some tools and assessments to help them answer that question, because we're looking at, all right, we look at three things about, are you ready to sell? Number one, are you personally ready to sell? Are you, from a financial perspective, just from a mental psyche perspective, and you know, what are you going to do after this business that you've been building and growing for 30 years is no longer there? So are you ready personally? Number two, is your business ready? And that gets into the intangibles we're talking about. And then lastly, how attractive is your business today? And so we go through that and work with it. And I think our business owners, we've had some extremely successful exits and sales where they followed that process and it went very well. And we're working with many right now. I said, no, it's time for me to reinvest, and I'm not ready to sell.
Yeah. You know, it's like you, I work with some local like SBA offices, and they'll do a class for, you know, 12 weeks and teach people how to start a business. And sometimes the person will come through the class and go, thank you so much for this, because I'm now not going to start a business because I've learned so much and I need to now wait or do this. And so sometimes that knowledge really is power. And I think that is so huge to, you know, think ahead and make sure that everything is set the right way. And I think you brought up some just spectacular points, Robin. So if someone's listening to this wondering, hey, I've got a family business and I might want to look at exit planning with a nice runway of time here, what can you do for me? What's the best way they can learn a little bit more and then reach out and connect with you?
Well, number one, go to our website. I'm really proud of our website. We have it's just full of information. It's Ferguson-Alliance.com. So www.Ferguson-Alliance.com. That's Ferguson Alliance. That's us. Go to our website, and I suggest that you go to there's two places. We have a blog that has great information. Then we have resources. You go to our resource tab. We have a free ebook that's called The Prosperity Plan. It breaks down our methodology of how we help family businesses grow their value and grow their legacy in their business. So check those resources out. Check out the ebook. And then we also have a toll-free number that your listeners can call. That's 833-215-6252, 833-215-6252. It's on our website as well. And you can always email me at rob@ferguson-alliance.com.
Excellent. Well, Rob, thank you so much for coming on today. It was a real pleasure talking with you.
Thank you for having me. I enjoyed the conversation.
You've been listening to Influential Entrepreneurs with Mike Saunders. To learn more about the resources mentioned on today's show or listen to past episodes, visit www.influentialentrepreneursradio.com.